When we take our bhikkhu ordination, there's a it's kind of like a summary or a summary or a kind of a like a commitment to, or a review of what we're committing ourselves to, and the sort of adi sila sika sikitapa, adi jitta sika sikitapa, adi panya sika sikitapa. So that training in the higher virtue, training in the higher mind, training in the higher wisdom. And the training in the higher wisdom, and the Buddha defines as the understanding of the Four Noble Truths, and that being able to raise that up as a theme of contemplation in our meditation, in our practice, that reviewing, reflecting, recollecting, investigating how our experience kind of displays itself within those kind of categories of the Four Noble Truths. It's an important part of learning how to investigate, because it's not just sort of random thinking or trying to have nice thoughts or intelligent thoughts. And there's, one can have all sorts of intelligent thoughts and still suffer enormously. But the Buddha's kind of criterion and a format really for wise and skillful investigation and application of mind is rooted in this investigation of the Four Noble Truths, so that we taking our experience, and particularly say during this period where our winter retreat, actually we've got a couple of weeks under our belt, and the mind should be settling down a little bit anyway. But to take that whatever calmness, whatever clarity is arising, and directing it in the most fruitful way, that fruitful way is looking at things with the eye of discernment as to what is dukkha. When the Buddha says that only dukkha arises and only dukkha passes away, is that just kind of the grumblings of a disaffected grumpy old fart, or is it somebody who has really understood and really transcended the world? I can remember when I first came across that sutta, that statement, there's only suffering arising, only suffering ceasing. So, really? Wow. That's kind of hard to swallow. But then, one is, of course, reading it in translation, and then starting to get a feel for what the Buddha calls dukkha, in that the whole realm of experience that sort of the expression of the different ways of, you know, unsatisfactoriness, of discontent, of stress, of things being, you know, not comfortable, not totally satisfying. And then he goes, oh yeah, that's really how we experience everything. And of course, the Buddha is pointing to the cause, and that's our own internal desire and attachment system that kind of misconstrues everything, is unable to be really at peace with things. So that to be able to investigate that, and particularly when we're meditating, and one, you know, whether the mind is becoming peaceful or not, one can still be bringing up that reflection, because say it doesn't need a completely still and peaceful mind to recognize when we're not really settled, when we're not really able to be content with our mind as it is, not able to really penetrate the nature of the mind. So that and seeing that, and it's not as if we're going to get some kind of mystical experience that's going to clear it all up for us. We have to be able to investigate and understand how the mind works, what those habits and tendencies are, to really see the ways that we create that discontent, that suffering, that feeling of there always being some sort of obstacle, some kind of resistance in a system. So that kind of investigation is not just sort of trying to reinforce our negative habits and tendencies. It's looking at what needs to be fixed, what needs to be attended to. It's not strange when we go to see a doctor. We don't think the doctor's really weird, kind of incompetent or deranged, because you go to see a doctor and the doctor asks you where it hurts. Where does it hurt? Where is it painful? That's one would expect that. The same in the Buddha's question of where is the dukkha? How is the dukkha manifesting? What is it about? It's important to be able to look and identify clearly. What are the symptoms of our dis-ease, so that we can really rectify it, understand it clearly. If one were a a naturalist or a hunter even. I mean, and when we're, you don't sort of go just sort of wandering around, crashing through the forest, looking for the next interesting animal to sort of detail or wandering around looking for some sort of animal for your next meal. You go hungry. That way, you've got to be able to figure out where the animals are actually going to go, so that you sit by a water source, you sit by a salt lake, and you pay attention to where they're going to gather. So in the same way, we don't just sort of meditating and keeping opening spacious awareness of everything that arises and ceases. I mean, it's a bit vague and unfocused. One has to take a point of investigation, and that investigation of dukkha is where we start to see our habits, our conditioning, both the obstacles to our peace and understanding, but also that's where we see a way out as well, because it's when in that formulation of the Four Noble Truths, it's that recognition of suffering, the knowledge and understanding of dukkha, that gives us the opportunity to recognize more clearly its cause. When the cause is discerned, then there's a possibility of that experience of the cessation of dukkha. And that cessation of dukkha, of course, is not there's a particular methodology, a particular way of practice that we need to learn how to implement. Is that without the tools, without the kind of ways of practice that laid out in the Eightfold Path, and establishing a kind of correctness, appropriate application of that path, and then we don't experience. The Buddha has this great images that he uses to say, imagine a person who wanted oil. I mean, like cooking oil, and they got some gravel and put it in a pot, and they sort of poured a bit of water on it, and they pounded it, and they sifted it, and they squeezed it, strained it, and would they get cooking oil? And of course not. They're not going to get cooking oil from gravel. It's all wrong. It's wrong right from the beginning. I mean, there's certain elements that may be right, but everything has to be. This is where the talk that I read the other day, the path in harmony, where that path of practice has to be sammapatibhata, has to be right practice. That has to be rightly applied, right view, right thought. It has to be, and it isn't as if everything is sort of absolutely right, but it's right in terms of it works together, it functions together. We're practicing in a way that practice is in harmony with the goal of the practice, and that so that the one has bits of the method down, but then one's got one's trying to get gravel to turn into oil. It's not going to work. But the Buddha says, if somebody took sesame seeds and got a whole bunch of sesame seeds and put them in the pot and put a bit of water and pounded them, strained them, and squeezed them, would they get cooking oil? And say, yes, of course. It's because it's all the elements of the path are there, so that right application of the path, the right application of that investigation, seeing how these work together, seeing dukkha, seeing the cause of dukkha, seeing the cessation of dukkha, seeing the path leading to cessation of dukkha. That recognizing that our practice is we're having to have a bit of an understanding of what we're trying to accomplish, because if we're and of course that's why the Buddha uses that say dukkha as a focal point, because it's a realizable and suitable way to cast the practice, both in terms of the investigation as well as the actual practice itself, so that we're, as we implement the different elements of the path of practice, path of training, to be investigating and adjusting, is this leading to a decrease in dukkha or not? Is it leading to an increase in well-being or not? Is it leading to... And of course, dukkha has so many kind of nuances, that they, does it lead to more greed, hatred, and delusion, or does it lead to a decrease in greed, hatred, and delusion? So to be investigating. It isn't just sort of practicing and waiting for some fantastic experience at the end of it all. One has to be realizing that one's actual practice has to be implementing the elements of the path, and that and recognize, is there dukkha? Is there the cause of dukkha there? Is there a cessation of dukkha manifesting? What is the path? What is the ways of practice that lead to that cessation of dukkha, that diminishing, that decreasing of dukkha? So that picking up that theme of dukkha and its elements, the Four Noble Truths, this is a really important tool for us to be able to establish ourselves in right practice. Another image that the Buddha uses supposing a person was wanting some milk, and you go to a cow, and you say cows give milk, so you go to find a cow, and you twist its horn, and it's not going to work. You got parts of it there, but it's not. One's not implementing it appropriately, so that this application of all the different elements of the Four Noble Truths, this is something that we learn how to apply, learn how to implement, so that understand, and this is where these Four Noble Truths, it's important to recognize that the noble truth of suffering is to be understood. It's to be known and understood. And the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, is to be relinquished, to be let go of, to be done away with. Third noble truth, the experience of the cessation of suffering is to be realized. It's to really experience and realize this cessation of dukkha. And the path leading to cessation of suffering is to be brought into being, is to be developed, is to be cultivated. So that applying the appropriate response or the duty that one has to each noble truth appropriately, it's important to get that right, because so often when we experience some kind of discontent, dissatisfaction, some kind of suffering in some way, shape, or form, then our impulse is to try to get rid of it, try to let it go, letting go of the suffering. And of course it's still not been seen and understood clearly. So as long as it's still not seen and understood clearly, then it's not the time to be extinguishing it, because it's not going to be extinguished. It's just going to flare up in some other way, shape, or form. It has to be understood. That comes to my mind of a painful memory on my part of putting out a fire at my kuti and when I was at Chitters. There's the coals from the fire. Put them out, but it's not. And then I walk away from it, and it just flares up again. Of course, turned into a fire. You have to understand that's the nature of fire or nature of coals. So they have to be. You have to know and understand what you're working with. And if it hasn't been understood, then you do superficial kind of ways of dealing with things, and it doesn't do the trick. It comes back to haunt one. So the same with suffering. When it's not been understood, we're not willing to investigate it clearly and understand it clearly and be present with it, so that it's seen fully, then we don't understand the causes properly. We're not able to relinquish the causes, And this is something in meditation, in our practice, to be really investigating. We've all experienced enough discontent, dissatisfaction, pain and difficulty, to know what it feels like, but to be willing to really practice it, to investigate it, to apply discernment. And that's something that we need to be willing to do. The Buddha gives an image of the, say, one who sees and investigates the Four Noble Truths is like somebody who has a mind like lightning, and that sort of lightning flashes, and one's able to get a, even if it's dark at night, one could still get a glimpse of the things around one and understand, get one's bearings, to be able to apply the mind in that way, so that there's this giving oneself a flash of lightning, a flash of clarity, a flash of insight into the nature of our experience. So with those Four Noble Truths, are the tool to give a bit of an opening into the nature of our existence, and that's kind of the first really solid step on a path of peace, of clarity. As the Buddha also sort of gives the image of the ordinary unenlightened being, and the Buddha says the mind is like an open sore. It's kind of sensitive and comes into whatever it comes into contact with, and it's cause for more sort of pain and difficulty and more irritation, more sort of weeping of infection and pus and whatnot. So it's a very vivid image, and Buddha, somebody with a mind like an open sore, is whatever they come in contact with, it's a source of irritation. So they see something that they don't like, and come in contact with some kind of criticism, and it's just a source of irritation and pain. And even if you come into contact with something that you like, it still is kind of an aggravation. It's an irritation in terms of it's not settling. It's not peaceful. It's like with an open sore. Even if it's something somewhat pleasant, it still is a source of ongoing infection, so that to be willing to cultivate that investigation of the fundamentals that allow us to step out of that uncomfortable condition and get a glimpse of truth, a glimpse of reality. And that's what those Four Noble Truths are for, to give us a handle on experience, so that we're not just trapped and circling around in this experience of discontent and dissatisfaction. Because even if it's something pleasant, it doesn't necessarily mean that it satisfies us. When you think of the, you know, the world today with the degree of comfort and material well-being and all of the things that are pleasurable, that are available, and it doesn't, you know, the kind of the state of the human race is not, we're not the society and culture and individuals are not awash in mental well-being and contentment, so that learning how to address that internally, so that necessity of learning how to apply these Four Noble Truths in our meditation, in our our experience of the world around us, because it's both in terms of the meditation, but then also as we move from posture to posture, situation to situation, to have a point of reflection and investigation and anchor that's going to ground us in some aspect of truth. And these Four Noble Truths are really the glue or the key that holds it together. So you can use that for reflection.